I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
We'll be signing a historic agreement that will make the United States a major partner in developing Ukraine's minerals and rare earths and oil and gases. And we have a great understanding. I think it's going to be great for Ukraine. We're going to be at the site and we'll be digging. We'll be digging. Dig we must.
President Trump's meeting at the White House today with Ukrainian President Zelensky to sign a deal to give the United States access to Ukraine's rare earth minerals. What is Ukraine getting in return? We'll look at the deal as well as the latest round of U.S.-Russia talks and the growing rift between the U.S. and Europe. Then unlawfully detained, tortured and starved, the plight of Gaza's medical workers in Israeli custody. A new report by Physicians for Human Rights Israel accuses Israel of systematically imprisoning and abusing Palestinian doctors and medical staff from Gaza. Finally, we speak to the head of the Internet Archive's Wayback Machine about the group's efforts to preserve thousands of government web pages being deleted by the Trump administration.
Since the inauguration, we've seen large numbers of web sites and web pages taken offline. For example, if someone tries to find PDF documents on the tech.ed.gov website of the Department of Education, hundreds of them are simply not available anymore where they were before.
We'll speak with Mark Graham. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A federal judge in California ruled late Thursday President Trump and Elon Musk's mass firings of probationary government workers were illegal, siding with a coalition of labor unions and nonprofit groups. Judge William Alsup ordered the Office of Personnel Management to retract memos directing numerous agencies to fire an estimated total of 200,000 workers and to inform department heads that the OPM has no such authority. But he stopped short of ordering a halt to the firings, leaving that move up to the affected agencies. The news came just as a wave of layoffs was underway at NOAA. That's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Hundreds of probationary workers working on crucial climate and weather projects lost their jobs. It's not clear if Judge Alsup's ruling will lead to the reversal of those or any other firings. In related news, a federal judge in Virginia ruled the Trump administration can fire dozens of CIA and intelligence officers who worked on diversity programs, DEI. Earlier Thursday, the Trump administration announced it's cutting 90% of USAID's overseas contracts and $60 billion in U.S. assistance around the world. The move will terminate funding for critical polio, HIV, malaria, and nutrition programs, among other things. Thousands of USAID workers were given 15 minutes to clear out their desks. Peers and supporters greeted fired workers as they left the building.
I worry about the people that have gone this many days without food, without medicine, without the humanitarian assistance that we promised them.
Talk to the average American. Do they want to see people dying because of assistance cut off? You know, there would have been a very clear and particular way to reform the foreign assistance sector in this country, to reform USAID. And frankly, a lot of people sort of wanted to see that.
The Trump administration canceled a planned FDA meeting of the Federal Vaccine Advisory Committee next month that was set to determine the composition of next season's flu shots. It's the second canceled vaccine panel meeting since Robert F. Kennedy Jr. became Health and Human Services Secretary. To see our interview with a pediatrician in Texas where there's a measles outbreak, go to democracynow.org. Beijing pledged to retaliate after Trump said the U.S. would slap another 10% tariff increase on Chinese goods starting Tuesday, March 4th. Trump also said Thursday 25% tariffs on goods from Canada and Mexico will go into effect Tuesday after a one-month pause. Both Canada and Mexico have vowed retaliatory tariffs. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum says her government is still in talks with the U.S. in hopes of heading off a trade war.
Sabemos que el presidente Trump...
We know President Trump has his way of communicating and setting negotiation timings and joint work. We must think we can reach an agreement.
This comes as European nations slam Trump's 25% tariff threat on European Union goods as irresponsible and blasted Trump's comments Thursday.
I mean, look, let's be honest. The European Union was formed in order to screw the United States. That's the purpose of it. And they've done a good job of it. But now I'm president.
Meanwhile, President Trump indicated the UK would be spared from any sort of U.S. instigated trade war as he met with British Prime Minister Keir Starmer at the White House Thursday. We'll have more on that meeting after headlines. During Starmer and Trump's Oval Office meeting, Trump also appeared to soften his stance on Ukraine, saying he has a lot of respect for the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, a man he had called a dictator. He also suggested the president the presence of U.S. workers in Ukraine to exploit rare earth minerals would provide security from Russian troops. Trump was asked about his recent remarks calling Zelensky a dictator.
Mr. President, do you still think that Mr. Zelensky is a dictator?
Did I say that? I can't believe I said that. Next question.
President Zelensky is meeting with Trump at the White House today. Hamas is calling on the international community to put pressure on Israel as Gaza ceasefire talks resume in Cairo, and the first phase of the agreement is set to expire Saturday. On Thursday, Israel released, after a delay, the remaining 46 Palestinian prisoners of the latest captive swap. 24 of them were children. This is Nida Abu Salhu, mother of one of the released children.
Muhammad has been detained for 420 days. He has spent the second birthday in prison. Please be to God that he was released after all this wait.
In Israel, an internal probe has acknowledged the military's complete failure to prevent Hamas's October 7th attacks, which killed over 1,000 people and saw another 200 taken hostage. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces shot and killed another Palestinian child. 16-year-old Hamid Mohammed Fadel Nazal was shot near the northern Qalqilya checkpoint. Here in the United States, Axios is reporting House Foreign Affairs Chair Brian Mast has instructed Republican committee staff to refer to the West Bank by its Hebrew name Judea and Samaria. It's the latest attempt to deny Palestinians' rights in the Israeli-occupied territory. In Turkey, the jailed Kurdish rebel leader Abdullah Öcalan has called on his followers in the PKK, that's the Kurdistan Workers' Party, to lay down arms and dissolve their organization, paving the way for the first ceasefire since a peace process collapsed in 2015. Since 1984, Turkey's waged a counterinsurgency campaign against the PKK in Turkey's Kurdish-dominated southeast region, where fighting has killed more than 40,000 people. Meanwhile, the commander of the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces group, which controls northeastern Syria, said Öcalan's directive does not apply to his organization.
This issue is related to the PKK, the issue of laying down arms, and it has nothing to do with us, and it is not directed at us and our forces. But if this operation succeeds, we will also benefit from it, because Turkey has concerns about the PKK, and because of the PKK, Turkey is attacking our regions. And because the PKK will dissolve itself, itself and lay down its arms, then there will be no danger to Turkey, and there will be no excuse to attack our regions.
Turkey's military has repeatedly attacked Kurdish forces in Syria, including the People's Protection Units, or YPG, which Turkey considers part of the PKK. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, at least 11 people were killed, dozens injured after explosions at a mass rally held by the Rwanda-backed M23 group in Bukavu. M23 leaders accused Congolese security forces of orchestrating the attack. Survivors described the chaotic scene.
A plastic bag was thrown in front of us over there. We didn't know what was inside. We were just looking at it. Suddenly, there was an explosion. Poof! Poof! We fell to the ground and ran away.
Some 7,000 people have been killed by the escalating violence since January, with hundreds of thousands displaced from their homes. To see our coverage of the DRC, go to democracynow.org. Thailand's deported 40 Uyghur asylum seekers to China, ignoring warnings from human rights groups that they'll likely face torture and imprisonment if returned. The group of asylum seekers fled China, seeking protection in Thailand, where they were instead arrested in 2014 and detained for over a decade. This is UN High Commissioner for Human Rights spokesperson Liz Throssell.
Their deportation violates the principle of non-refoulement, for which there is a complete prohibition in cases where there is a real risk of torture, ill treatment, or other irreparable harm upon their return.
China has been accused of human rights abuses against Uyghur Muslims that may amount to crimes against humanity. In news from Europe, Austria's three main centrist parties reached a deal Thursday to form a new ruling coalition without involving the far-right Freedom Party that won Austria's parliamentary elections 5 months ago. Meanwhile, Germany's conservative Christian Democratic Union, which won last Sunday's elections, and the center-left Socialist Democratic Party are launching coalition talks today. The far-right AfD, Alternative for Germany Party, came in second place, but all other parties have ruled out forming a coalition with the AfD. World leaders have agreed to establish a global fund aimed at protecting biodiversity and preventing the worst impacts of nature loss by 2030. The deal by negotiators at the UN Biodiversity Summit in Rome, known as COP16, came after days of marathon negotiations. The deal comes as global wildlife populations have plunged by more than 70% over the last 40 years, largely due to human activity. Questions remain on the establishment of the fund and the commitment from global North nations, which are largely responsible for the worsening climate crisis. Back in the U.S., the House and Senate voted to overturn an EPA rule that would have required oil companies to pay fees for emitting methane, a potent greenhouse gas known as a superpollutant. The measure came as part of 2022's Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, but had not yet gone into effect. The rule was expected to bring in billions of dollars. Elon Musk has called for the cancellation of Verizon's $2.4 billion contract to upgrade the Federal Aviation Administration's air traffic control system, following reports the FAA is close to reassigning the work to Musk's own internet satellite company, Starlink. Last week, Musk shipped about 4,000 Starlink terminals to the FAA. That prompted criticism from many, including Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey, who said the move, quote, creates an appearance of a conflict of interest. Last month, Trump's Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy announced he'd assigned SpaceX engineers to modernize U.S. air traffic control systems following the deadly crash of an American Airlines flight as it approached Washington, D.C.'s Reagan National Airport. In Iowa, hundreds of protesters took to the Capitol building in Des Moines to defend trans rights as lawmakers passed an unprecedented bill stripping civil rights protections based on gender identity. Iowa State Representative Amy Wickendall, the first transgender woman elected to Iowa's legislature, spoke out against the bill from the House floor.
This bill revokes protections to our jobs, our homes, and our ability to access credit. In other words, it deprives us of our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. I bring this up because the purpose of this bill and the purpose of every anti-trans bill is to further erase us from public life and to stigmatize our existence. The sum total of every anti-trans and anti-LGBTQ bill is to make our existence illegal.
A self-described misogynist who's accused by Romanian authorities of human trafficking and rape has arrived in the United States after the Trump administration lifted travel restrictions on him. Andrew Tate, a far-right social media influencer and prominent Trump supporter, returned to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Thursday, along with his brother Tristan, who also faces human trafficking charges in Romania. The pair's return came after Romania's foreign minister told the AP a Trump administration official expressed interest in the brothers' case at the recent Munich security conference. Here in New York, two men were pronounced dead just hours apart Wednesday at a maximum security prison in Westchester County as a wildcat strike by guards across dozens of prisons in the state continues for a second week. Anthony Douglas, who was 67, and 35-year-old Franklin Dominguez were both found unresponsive in their cells inside the Sing Sing Correctional Facility. Their death comes days after 61-year-old Jonathan Grant was also found dead in another prison where guards have walked off the job. To see our interview on the wildcat strike and what's happening to prisoners inside Attica and other prisons, go to democracynow.org. And consumers across the U.S. are taking part in a 24-hour economic blackout today. The campaign, organized by the People's Union, is urging U.S. customers to refrain from shopping, in particular from major corporations like Amazon and Walmart, in order to, quote, take back control of our economy, government, and future of our country, unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's meeting at the White House today with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to sign a deal to give the United States access to Ukraine's rare earth minerals. But details of the deal remain unclear, including what Ukraine gets in exchange. Today's meeting comes just over a week after Trump accused Zelensky of being a dictator. But on Thursday, Trump appeared to back off the charge when questioned by a reporter.
Did I say that? I can't believe I said that. Next question.
President Trump made the comment while meeting at the White House with the British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. On Thursday, Trump also talked about the mineral deal with Ukraine.
We'll be signing a historic agreement that will make the United States a major partner in developing Ukraine's minerals and rare earths and oil and gases, and we have a great understanding. I think it's going to be great for Ukraine. We're going to be at the site, and we'll be digging. We'll be digging. Dig we must. The American taxpayers will now effectively be reimbursed for the money and hundreds of billions of dollars poured into helping Ukraine defend itself, which by and of itself is a very worthy thing to do. Additionally, the minerals agreement will provide the basis for a more sustainable future relationship between the United States and Ukraine, and thus stimulate the long-term prosperity that will help the Ukrainians rebuild their country. It's been demolished.
This all comes as a rift is growing between the United States and Europe as the Trump administration moves closer to Russia. On Thursday, U.S. and Russian diplomats met in Turkey for another round of talks as momentum grows to end the war in Ukraine. But many questions remain about what a peace deal could look like. We're joined in Washington, D.C. by Matt Duss, Executive Vice President, Center for International Policy, former foreign policy advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders. His recent piece for The Guardian has headlined, "What Are We to Make of Trump's Ukraine Policy?" Matt, welcome back to Democracy Now! Talk about what you understand at this point. At the time of this broadcast, the meeting between Zelensky and Trump has not taken place at the White House yet.
Right. Well, what we understand, what I understand right now is that a few weeks ago, this deal on rare earth minerals actually originated with the Ukrainians in the hopes that this would be a way to entice Donald Trump into offering U.S. security guarantees. They understand, I think quite rightly, that Donald Trump is always interested in how he can profit, how he can cut deals. And the hope was that in exchange for some claim to Ukraine's rare earth mineral wealth, this would translate into real military security guarantees from the United States to Ukraine's security. Donald Trump responded to that by saying, I love this idea. I'm not going to give you any real security guarantees. However, he does seem to imply that by giving the United States a stake in the future, in future profits in Ukraine, this in itself could translate into a form of security guarantee. He has talked about U.S. workers being present doing this work in Ukraine as a form of a guarantee, but believing that would also mean that Donald Trump, the United States, would respond militarily to an attack by Russia that endangered those Americans. So this is still unclear, as are the actual details of this minerals deal.
So, I mean, it's very interesting because you'd think the person who's most concerned about this, I mean, Zelensky, for reasons of just how much of the rare earth minerals they would be promising to the U.S., but the person who'd be most concerned about this is the president of Russia, Putin.
I mean, I think that's right. He obviously does not want the United States and Ukraine to be drawing into a closer relationship. So, again, this is why I say we really do need to wait and see the actual details of this deal. As of right now, it has Ukraine promising to invest some portion of their mineral wealth into a shared fund between Ukraine and the United States, and which would also be reinvested in Ukraine, although U.S. companies would be the ones developing this. Donald Trump sees this as a way of getting the United States, quote, paid back for its support for Ukraine's defense. But you're right. Anything that draws the U.S. and Ukraine closer is something that can't make Vladimir Putin very happy.
During his first cabinet meeting this week, President Trump was asked by reporters about tariffs on the European Union. And I'm asking you this as Trump just met, of course, with the British Prime Minister Starmer. They also talked about Ukraine. But this is particularly interesting, what he said, what Trump said about the European Union.
Formed in order to screw the United States. That's the purpose of it. And they've done a good job of it, but now I'm president.
What President Trump just said, the beginning was cut off, is that the EU, the European Union, was formed to screw the United States. Can you talk about the history and what Trump is talking about?
He, from his perspective, he clearly sees the EU as a way to just form a larger economic bloc that could compete with and possibly, as he said it, screw the United States. But obviously, it's much more complicated than that. Economic competition is part of it. I mean, coming out of World War II, there was a huge security and political component of this. Europe trying to draw together to coordinate and to talk more effectively to avoid a third round. We went through two world wars, driven by European economic and military competition. So it was a real effort to avoid that. But Donald Trump simply sees it as a way, as he said, to screw the United States by, separate European countries drawing together into one large economic formation that could make joint economic decisions.
And so now President Trump is threatening tariffs starting Tuesday on Mexico, on Canada, increased tariffs on China, and threatening to tariff the whole European Union.
Right. I mean, he did this in his first term. He sees tariffs as, yet another way to extract concessions. It's hard to know exactly how far he's going to go, as we saw in his comments just now about Zelensky. Last week, he was calling Zelensky a dictator. This week, he can't believe he said that. Frankly, I can't believe he said that either. So we'll have to wait and see what he actually does. I think what's interesting about all these meetings we've been seeing from European leaders, Macron last week and Starmer just yesterday, and I'm sure we'll see this from Zelensky today, is that they all understand that they do not want to be in public spats with Donald Trump. They're seeking ways to flatter him. They're seeking ways to demonstrate that he can profit from a better relationship with their countries.
In your recent piece for The Guardian, where you talk about what are we to make of Trump's Ukraine policy, you talk about discussions between the U.S. and Moscow and deciding the future of Ukraine. You also compare this to U.S.-Israel relations as both nations plan the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from Gaza. So if you can talk about, in both cases, the first, leaving out Ukraine, though he's meeting with Zelensky today and denying he said, of course, he did say that Zelensky's a dictator, but leaving out Ukraine and leaving out the Palestinians when it comes to their fate.
Right. I mean, I see, you know, a great deal of similarity, you know, a consistency to Trump's approach. He sees, you know, the global order as one in which great powers, powerful countries make the decisions, and less powerful countries, less powerful communities and peoples simply have to live with the consequences. We saw that in his, you know, the negotiation between the United States and Russia, hosted by Saudi Arabia, where, you know, Russia and the United States were essentially determining the future of Ukraine. We saw this in the appearance at the White House with Benjamin Netanyahu a few weeks ago, where he announced his, you know, proposal for the removal, essentially the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, a decision with huge consequences for the Palestinian people and for the region, made without a Palestinian in sight. So again, I think this is how Trump sees the world, the United States, by dint of its enormous economic and military power, sits with other great powers and simply determines the rules of the road, and weaker countries and other peoples who aren't in the room have to deal with it.
Finally, you saw this video, AI-generated video, that President Trump retweeted on his social media on Truth Social. This horrific video about Gaza, and it has Trump Gaza, a huge hotel. It has a gold statue of President Trump. It has Elon Musk walking down the streets, and it has Netanyahu and Trump sitting on beach chairs on the ocean with their cocktails. And finally, it has Trump dancing with a almost completely naked, her bottom naked woman. What is this?
I don't have a good answer for you. I don't know who dropped acid and made that video.
The point isn't who made it. The point is he tweeted it.
That's right. No, that's right. You know, it is, it's, you know, clearly that appealed to him. But I mean, we saw this from his comments with Netanyahu, is that he sees, you know, the redevelopment, as he would say it, of Gaza as a source of potential profit, just as he sees this deal on rare earth minerals with Ukraine as a source of potential profit. In both of these cases, you always have to follow the money. The thing that to ask about every decision Donald Trump makes is, how does this translate into money in Donald Trump's pocket? So he clearly sees some advantage into this, you know, this garish redevelopment of Gaza into, you know, one big Trump casino and golf course, of course, without any consideration for the people who actually live there right now.
Matt Duss, I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Vice President, Center for International Policy, former Foreign Policy Advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders, and we'll link to your piece in The Guardian. Next up, we go to Ramallah and Gaza to speak with a detained doctor who just got out. And we'll talk about a new report called Unlawfully Detained, Tortured, and Starved, the Plight of Gaza's Medical Workers in Israeli Custody. Where is Dr. Abu Safia, from the head of the Kamel Adwan Hospital, taken by the Israeli military? Many thought he'd be released in this release of Palestinian prisoners, but he's nowhere to be found in that group. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Lullaby for Faith by the Russian anti-war singer and composer Vadim Stroykin. The Guardian reports he died earlier this month after reports that Russian security services visited him in his apartment to investigate claims he donated to the Ukrainian army, and they claimed he jumped out of the window. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Negotiations between Israel and Hamas have begun in Cairo, Egypt, over the next phase of the Gaza ceasefire.